Welcome to episode 293 of Amazing Avenue Audio, the official podcast of your SB Nation New York Mets site, Amazing Avenue. My name is Brian Salvatore. Thank you for joining us this week. We are in the midst of a little bit of a good time, I guess, for the Mets in this season. Obviously, this is very conditional, but they've been winning more games than they've been losing, and the young players are contributing nicely. So I was supposed to have our friend Chris McTrain on the show, but he had some more important stuff come up, so I reached out to the Amazing Avenue community and got Jack McClune, one of our newer writers. He's a student at Fordham University, and he joined me for the first segment of this podcast. Take a listen. Well, folks, I am joined by first-time Amazing Avenue Audio co-host Jack McClune, and we are going to be talking about a bunch of different Met-related things, but we're going to start off by talking about Monday night's game against the Yankees. Even though the Mets are currently winning the game they're playing right now, 14-1 against Baltimore in the seventh inning, it seems like Monday night's win against the Yankees was, if you're the type of baseball fan who believes in things like momentum and bragging rights and those sorts of amorphous, hard-to-measure terms, Monday night seemed like a big deal. What was your general reaction to the Mets' Monday night victory over the Yankees, Jack?
First of all, I'm happy to be on for the first time. I'm always happy to be on podcasts. But I think the first thing that I took away from it is I am 100% a bragging rights person, at least when it comes to the Yankees.
Okay.
Being from Central New Jersey, I know a lot of Yankee fans. I have a lot of cousins who are Yankee fans. So getting to watch the Mets kind of out of nowhere beat the Yankees, nothing I wasn't exactly expecting, was a lot of fun to watch. I got to throw in a lot of jabs, especially with Severino not doing too hot. So I was happy in that regard. I'm always happy to watch that. I'm definitely 100% one of those Mets fans that's really happy when the Yankees lose. So getting to do it is always fun.
See, I think the Severino thing makes it really interesting because it was billed as the Battle of the Aces.
Mm-hmm.
But really only one ace showed up that night, and that was DeGrom. And again, it wasn't DeGrom's best start. He had a couple of balls drop in that maybe, you know, should have been caught or were just, you know, sort of Babbitt flukiness. But, you know, he struck out 12.
That's what's crazy, right? It's like DeGrom didn't have his best night and he struck out 12 guys.
Yeah.
That's the level that we have him on now. Is it 12 strikeouts? Like, yeah, I guess. He still gave up three runs.
Yeah.
Like, that were two runs. Like, it seems like it was a problem.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. He's just on a different level right now. But what I liked about the game, more so than any of the results of the game, was I really liked that the Mets were doing something that it seemed they did every game during that first 12 games of the season, where whenever the Yankees would add a run, the Mets would add another one. Like, they wouldn't let them creep back up. You score a run, we're going to score a run. And just kept pushing. And obviously part of that is the Mets don't play in the coziest ballpark at home, and so to go to a place where the ball carries much, much better is a nice thing. But those weren't exactly scraping the back of the wall home runs. Some of those were no doubters, you know, were really, really just, you know, hit with authority. So it was fun to see the Mets fighting, because I feel like that's one thing that, you know, I've watched a lot of bad Mets teams in my 36 years on this earth, and one of the things that I really dislike is when the Mets are in that we're just looking so listless and passionless that the games are unwatchable phase. And this didn't seem like that at all. This seemed like a team on fire. And even if they lose, I'd rather watch that team lose than the other team win.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, too, because there is a lot of maybe too much pressure put on playing against the Yankees, but you do see it with the Mets. You see it in any rivalry game where a team does kind of get up for it. And it was, I guess, like you said, true on Monday. There was a lot of Mets fans there on Monday, which was also fun. Mm-hmm. A lot of resounding support for them. But the other thing I liked out of that game was that they won that game on the back of their younger players.
Yep.
Which is something you're always worried about when, like, even talking about the game tonight where they're up on the Orioles, that you're worried about them winning maybe a little bit because, like, oh, well, they're going to cost themselves a good draft pick, which is its own conversation. But if you're winning games because your young guys who are going to be here next year are doing well, you kind of are okay with it. I mean, Amed Rosario, Brandon Nimmo, and Conforto all homered. They all went, all had two hits. Flores went 1-for-4. McNeil went 2-for-5, drove in a run. Like, I mean, you got all of your young guys performing. You can't be too upset about that if that results in a win. I think if you're going to win, I'm happy it's not like Jose Reyes is hitting homers late.
Right.
It's your young guys are getting you the win.
Yeah, and I think just, you know, I would presume that if you're listening to an Amazing Avenue podcast, you're probably a guy who doesn't put a ton of stock, or girl, who put a ton of stock into pitcher wins.
Yeah.
But I think that we recognize that we live in a world with Tim Kirkjian, who was just unlistenably bad in that.
That whole booth was awful.
It really was, but Kirkjian is like the worst of the bunch, because that's a guy who should know better. He's a journalist,
right.
He should know better, and talking about how DeGrom wouldn't get the Cy Young vote for him because of the win total. So when you hear horse shit like that, it makes you root for outdated statistics, because
right.
you know, you want DeGrom to get those couple of wins so that people who have this myopic view of success can vote for him for the Cy Young Award. So, like, in my perfect world right now, you know, the Mets are going to lose a bunch more games. They get some good draft picks, but they're going to lose games that are like, you know, 10-9, or where, you know, the starters give up no runs and insert useless reliever here who won't be a part of the team next year gives up, you know, 10 runs in the bottom of the eighth inning, and they lose that way. I am totally fine with results like that.
Right. I mean, I guess it's almost just like you have to get on board with DeGrom at least getting pitcher wins, just because that's maybe, like, unfortunately, the reality of the situation. Like, okay, if he gets to 10, because that's what Felix had, right? When he won, he had 10 wins. He was like 10 and 13.
Yeah.
Something or something like that, bad. Yeah. So maybe say, okay, get DeGrom to 10, get him 3 more wins, then lose the rest of those.
Yeah.
And especially, that was the other positive too, was that he has this great start, or like great on a normal level, okay for him, on the national stage, which is something you, again, never want to put too much stock in, or you wish you didn't have to,
right.
but is true and is always going to be true, especially if it's against a team like the Yankees, who, even if they weren't this good, saying like, oh, he pitched really well against the Yankees would always be a positive.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, you mentioned sort of putting too much stock in Mets-Yankees games, and I totally understand that. You know, I am quite a bit older than you, Jack. And so I remember when the Mets playing the Yankees was a novel affair, when it wasn't something that
right.
happened all the time. And, you know, the Subway Series in 2000, God, how old were you in 2000?
I was 3.
Jesus Christ.
Or I was, yeah, I was 3.
I was in college. but, you know, I, when the, God damn it. you know, when that happened, there was this, like, you know, I was in college in Pittsburgh, so I was around a bunch of people who didn't really care, but they all seemed to hate the Yankees.
Right.
So there was this, like, rallying cry of being a Mets fan. And, you know, obviously it didn't go so well for the Mets,
yeah.
but that was sort of the beginning of this. You know, there was always the sort of unspoken little brother nature of the Mets and the Yankees.
Right.
But this was the first time where that was on display for something other than just the back pages of a newspaper or conversations
right.
among New York-centric baseball fans. Like, this is the first time that the world was seeing the Mets versus the Yankees. And, you know, I think all of us Mets fans, to some degree or another, have a chip on our shoulder about the Yankees, whether we want to admit it or not, whether it's the driving force behind our sort of local sports viewership or not, all of us have a little bit of that rivalry sort of just built into us. So it is always nice to see the Mets win in those games just for bragging rights. But I think also for the Mets as a team, it's always nice because the Yankees still have this just, you know, very, very different reputation around the city. And so to see a young player like a Brandon Nimmo or a, you know, Jeff McNeil, especially for someone like McNeil, who this is their first Subway Series, you know, to see the team win like that just gives them a taste of what New York in winning seasons can be like.
Yeah. And I mean, I blame it being his first Subway Series for McNeil trying to rush that throw to first on the double play that gave up the the unearned run. I mean, that was a play that I think in a normal situation he doesn't try to make, but he's like, oh, Yankee Stadium, I could turn a sweet double play, and he jacks it into the stands instead. But I guess the other thing in terms of chip on the shoulder with Mets fans is a big part of that is as a Met fan living in the New York area, you know a lot of Yankee fans,
Yep.
and you kind of don't like knowing Yankee fans, I think. I think a lot of people wanted to win this game, especially with DeGrom on the mound, because of all the calls of Yankee fans saying, like, the Mets owe it to DeGrom to trade him to the Yankees.
Yep.
They should get him out of there, get him on a winning team, which is such a, like, to generalize Yankee fans, it's such a typical Yankee fan statement to say that a guy deserves to be on our team, which is in and of itself, like, remove that from the Yankees. Who deserves to be on any team? That's such a bizarre statement. Like, what does that mean?
Yes.
But it's just, especially when it's a guy going from the Mets to the Yankees. So to get DeGrom to go out there and shove it against the Yankees was funny, because it's like, oh yeah, you wanted this guy too bad. He's not on your team and never will be, because at least the Wilpons will probably never make that bad decision. They're not great with the PR, but I like to think they wouldn't at least do that.
We'll see. I don't put anything past the Wilpons at this point in my
True.
life. But I sort of got shades, and again, this is not an important game in Mets history in any real way. But I sort
No.
of got the vibes of the Harvey's better clap 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 moment against the Nationals a number of years ago. You know, where just it was this momentum shift between. People talked about Strasburg being the best young pitcher in baseball, and then all of a sudden, here comes Harvey shoving against him, and it changed the conversation. Obviously, this is a much different scenario than that for a couple of reasons, but I got the same sort of Mets bragging rights vibe from it.
Yeah, because the back pages love, I think they're the ones that drive the most, the little brother. The back pages of the Post and the Daily News love to make them. They're the ones that basically started the Syndergaard and DeGrom trade rumor off of nothing, just a Photoshop. So I think the fact that I'm surprised that there were like posts, like chants about that. It's like, this is the New York Post's fault and we didn't want to do this at all. So yeah, to get DeGrom to, again, match up with the guy that there were articles saying that Severino was the better guy, because writers love comparing players too. Because I mean, there was all this stuff like, oh, well, Ahmed Rosario is going to be in Gleyber Torres' shadow, which makes no sense. Like, all this stuff is always coming out. So to get the opportunity to be like, oh yeah, well, you shouldn't have written this article, but here's why you're wrong in real time.
It was fun. And it was, again, it was on the Nash. It wasn't just a Subway Series game. It was an ESPN Subway Series game when they pulled out, for whatever reason, Keith Olbermann
Oh
to be
boy.
a part of that broadcast. But, Keith Olbermann's a guy with a lot of sort of name recognition in around, both sports and politics. So I guess maybe there were people tuning into the game that wouldn't have tuned in normally. I don't know. But it was certainly one of the more high-profile games the Mets have played late in this season. And so to see them come through in this way was just a really nice thing.
Yeah, that's kind of the biggest fear of the Mets playing on the national stage this year. It's like, oh my God, please don't embarrass me. Please don't embarrass me. And they didn't, which was a shock in and of itself.
It was a nice surprise. I think we can all agree about that. But let's talk about sort of the last, week and a half or 2 weeks of the Mets season. So we were talking before we started recording about how the Mets had a dreadfully bad last day of July. They lost 25-4 against the Nationals, and then they lost the next series they played against the Braves. They lost it 3-1. But starting with the Red Series, and then continuing over to the Marlins series and the Yankee game, and then it appears they're going to win tonight against the Orioles. And the Mets have not lost 2 games in a row since that, I guess since the series with the Braves on
Yeah,
the.
starting with that loss to the Nationals, they lost 4 in a row.
Yeah, and then after that, they haven't lost more than one. They haven't lost more than they haven't lost 2 in a row. They have at least won every other game, and that's not saying much at this point in the season. It's not, but it seems like Chris and I had talked a while back about how the Mets conceivably could have a better record in the second half than they did in the first half, even if they traded away a fair amount of their players, because just the combination of injuries and bad luck was such that you were going to see certain things get better no matter what happened. And I'm not saying that's still the case necessarily, but you're seeing McNeil continue to rake. You're seeing, the starting pitching continue to be really good. You're seeing Conforto start to wake up a little bit. You're seeing Nimmo maybe coming out of his slump a tad bit. You're seeing the emergence of Austin Jackson, which nobody saw coming.
Yeah, I can't believe it.
And it just seems to me like the Mets are looking a little bit more lively, a little bit more like the team maybe we hoped they would be earlier in the season. Do you put any stock in this?
A little. I mean, it's nice, like I said, with the Yankees game, it's nice to see the young guys playing well, but then you have to balance that out with, like, are you worried that you're winning too many games? And like what you said, like, you'd be happy to blow games late and have guys do well, but I mean, I don't put essentially a lot of stock in them winning per se. I like what you said about that Yankee game where they just came out and they looked like a better team who was more interested. And that's what I've seen a lot of. Like, even in this Orioles game, obviously it's gone out of proportion now, but you have Todd Frazier stealing a base. You have guys hitting triples. Like, it's stuff that doesn't happen when you're slumping and you're not trying very hard, I think, is especially, I think, triples. I think if you're on a team where you're just like kind of going through the motions, you're going to stop at second base. You're just going to be like, that's a whole other 90 feet. No, thank you.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's nice to see them performing better. I like it from the older guys in the sense that, okay, maybe we can get a waiver trade out of them. I still think probably Joey Bats goes at some point. He's just been too productive for them not to. It'd be insane if they get any kind of offer for him to not take it. And yeah, the Austin Jackson thing is blowing my mind. I mean, he's playing his way into a contract next year, whether that's a good idea or not.
Right. By the way, the Mets just gave up a run, so forget all the
Oh,
good things
yep.
we just said. No, I'm just
Yeah.
kidding. But
I mean, look, let's be honest. If a team is going to blow it, it'd be the
oh,
Mets.
of course they would. They would blow a 14-0 lead to the worst team in baseball, after a reasonably good start, because
Yeah.
that's just what the Mets do nowadays. But no, so I'm with you. I put a very little bit of stock in this, but I like seeing some of the younger players doing well. I like the fact that they're giving guys like Tim Peterson an extended look out of the bullpen,
Yeah.
because even if I don't necessarily believe in their stuff, depending on the guy, I just like having more data to work with in the off season.
Right.
So that's a good thing. I like them giving Plawecki and Mesoraco a fair amount of playing time, so that you can again begin to make those sort of decisions if you want to, trade Mesoraco if an offer comes through. Or I know our friend Allison, who another amazing Avenue writer, Allison is a big proponent of maybe signing Mesoraco to a 2-year extension in the off season. Just
Which I'm not opposed to either.
no,
Makes
I think it
sense.
makes a lot of sense, and I think that it's one of those moves that even if it goes poorly, it's not going to be for enough money to go that poorly. And if Darno comes back healthy, if Plawecki has an amazing spring training, well then, you might have to make a difficult decision, but I don't think it's that difficult of a decision to make.
Right. And I mean, I would like for the Mets to at least have a difficult decision to make at somewhere that isn't the outfield for once. Like, okay, well, we have a catching problem now, which is new. At least if they're gonna struggle to pick the right guys, I would like them to do it with someone new for once. I'm getting a little sick of the, yes, we have seven outfielders and two of them are good, but we have to play a third one because those are the rules. Like I get it. Like, okay, I'm over that conversation. Let's move on to a new one at least. Mix it up. Keep me on my toes for once. Let me learn about pitch framing statistics and like have to make a cogent argument there. Force me to do something new.
Instead of just roll your eyes at Jay Bruce.
Yes, pretty much. Which is like, I'm so over that. Oh boy. I like to consider myself on the forefront of hating Jay Bruce. I was so mad when they traded for him to begin with. I didn't like it. I thought trading for RBIs was the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And I got to the point where I had friends who would tweet me every time I hit a home run because I would be in that state of happy the Mets got a run, but sad because it was Jay Bruce's fault.
The Jose Reyes run. I
Yeah,
understand.
exactly. Yep, it's the same exact thing.
I am probably on the lower end of Jay Bruce hate, but it's gonna go down as one of the worst free agent signings in the 21st century for the Mets.
Yeah, which is hard.
It is. It is. This is a team that signed DJ Carrasco to a 2-year deal, and
Yeah.
that deal looks way smarter than the Jay Bruce trade, Jay Bruce signing right now. So,
It doesn't like it's never going to approach Jason Bay levels,
oh, I don't know about that
but
dude.
it might.
I think it has a very good chance of approaching Jason Bay levels.
Which is like, Jay Bruce should like feel bad that he's being compared to Jason Bay.
See,
That's
here's my
painful.
point, okay? Jason Bay was not a perfect player. We're all aware of this. But Jason Bay had not started his decline in earnest before he came to the Mets.
True.
There might have been signs there, but it wasn't like nobody thought like, "Oh God, the Mets are getting old man Bay." People were rightly perturbed at the Mets for trading for Jay Bruce when they did, because they understood that he was already on the decline of what was already a ballpark-driven all-star type career, you know. So I don't know. We'll see. But that actually transitions us well into another topic, which is that Bruce is supposed to start rehab games real soon, and that he's going to be rehabbing at first base, and that him rehabbing at first base is probably, at least for this season, going to keep Peter Alonso. He's very sensitive about so versus zo, apparently. So Pete Alonso, probably going to keep him down at Vegas for this season, if not possibly into next year as well. I have lots of thoughts on this, Jack, but let's start with you. What do you think about this potential?
Oh, it's absurd. I mean, everything about it is wrong. I think there's the two sides of it. Like, obviously, they signed Jay Bruce to this dumb contract, so they're going to want to keep playing, which I guess is fair. Like, if you're going to bite the bullet, you have to bite it all the way, like, whatever. But to do it at the expense of a guy who's been hitting the cover off the ball basically his entire minor league career, but especially this year, who the whole talk has been that he plays a bad defensive first base, but then one. The defensive award at first base for the entire Mets organization or Mets minor league system for the month of July. So there goes that excuse. Like, even if that is a PR driven award, you gave it to him, so you decided that that
Right,
was a good decision, even if it's not true. And just to get this to not see what you have in this guy, I mean, he's 23. He's always had power. He's a big dude. I mean, what's the only reason to not bring him up is very much just, oh, this is the Mets and we have this guy who I guess we're going to make play first base, who doesn't want to play first base. He
No.
has no real desire. I think he's said it on record that he doesn't like playing first base, but they really need that slow bat that isn't effective in the lineup, so I guess they're going to have to play.
I mean, intellectually, the one reason I didn't completely hate the Bruce signing in the offseason was I felt it was Dom Smith insurance, because I am not a Dom Smith believer, although I don't know if anybody in the Mets organization is anymore either. But I felt like the Mets needed, if they weren't going to sign Duda, which I was really hoping they would do because he's the good first baseman, and we want him here forever. If they weren't going to do that, at least they're signing somebody who, when Smith falters, can play a competent first base and might be able to hit you 20 or 25 home runs. So I understand the thinking from that perspective. What I continue to not understand, though, is if Bruce's plantar fasciitis is as serious as it has been made to seem, then why not just give him the season's lost anyway? Let him fully heal up, bring him back at spring. If he wants to work out in St. Lucie, awesome, go for it. But you have a chance, like you were saying, to get a real look at Alonso. You're able to give him 100 plate appearances between now and the end of the season if you want to, and really begin to get an understanding of who this guy is. And then that might make your decision a lot easier for next year, because if he comes up and he can't hit the breaking ball, well, that will slow his advancement. If he comes up and he's hitting the cover off the ball, it's going to make your decision easier in that way too. It takes so much guesswork out, and it costs you almost nothing.
And it's two ways where the Mets are hurting themselves too, because on the one hand, this seems to be their Achilles heel of bringing back guys when it doesn't matter, whether it was Syndergaard and Familia last year or whatever it is. They do this over and over again, trying to bring Cespedes back in a lost season before he got his surgery. Like, they do this over and over again, so why bring back Bruce for a season that clearly doesn't matter? But then on the other hand of it too, is like you said, it makes your decision easier. And if it That's the easiest decision. They could justify keeping him down so well. If they don't think he's ready, bring him up for 100 at-bats, show he isn't ready, and you'll get the fans off your back.
Yep.
Like, at least do that for yourself. I mean, it's an easy PR decision. Like, I guess it makes it harder if he does pan out, but if you're so confident that he won't, bring him up for 100 at-bats, which is its own weird way to think about your prospects. Like, I don't think he's ready yet, so I just, like, won't prove it. Like, why not have him come up for, like you said, 100 at-bats and make the decision hard or easy either way?
And look, I understand that you want to get guys like Wilmer Flores playing time over the course of the season.
The biggest Wilmer Flores fan in the world, so yes, I agree.
All of us are. Everybody believes that they're the biggest Wilmer Flores fan in the world.
That's fair.
But I'm not doubting your bona fides. I'm just saying, you know, that's what we all think.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But, you know, like, so I understand that you want him to play more, and you also want McNeil to play every day, and you want to see that Frazier isn't a totally sunk cost at third base, and you're not going to give you're not going to anybody that's not named Rosario real time at shortstop, even though they sometimes give Jose Reyes time there, which, you know.
Yeah, that's really smart.
Whole other story. But, you know, like, you can cut bait with Reyes or have Reyes ride the pine the rest of the season. That's not going to matter at all. There are ways to get all those other players playing time while still having Alonso play 4 out of 5 days at first base.
Yeah, and in reality, Flores can be, he's shown he can at least semi-handle most of the positions on the infield.
Yeah.
I mean, he can't do shortstop anymore. I think that's pretty much out of the question, but he does it okay at third. I mean, they've always said that his best position is second, and then he's had some really rough moments at first base that have made you a little disheartened, especially with pop-ups. He just can't seem to handle them, but I mean, if he's a below-average defender but can be semi-competent at all three positions, make him your super utility guy. Yeah. I mean, he hasn't played enough of the other infield positions this year, I think. Like, kind of stuck him at first base out of kind of necessity, but I think once they hopefully bring Alonso up or they do settle on Bruce at first, it shouldn't cut into his playing time as much, because while they think Jose Reyes is a super utility guy, they have a guy in Reyes, I keep doing it. It's a really bad Freudian slip. Yeah. I don't like doing that at all. But I think Flores could be that guy for them who would be much more competent.
Oh, absolutely.
Right, it's all over the field.
Yeah. Yeah, and Flores has proven himself to be a good pinch hitter, too.
Yeah.
And maybe not this season as much, but that's a skill that he has. So, yeah. I'm with you, man. This makes no sense to me.
No.
So, you know, I've kind of been asking, we've had sort of a rotating cast of co-hosts lately on the show. So, I've been kind of asking a similar question. It's your turn now. If you were given the keys to the team for the rest of the season, what would you do with the team to try and maximize whatever it is you want to maximize? If it's looks at young players, if it's trying to maximize wins for whatever reason, how would you run the team for the last, you know, six to seven weeks of the season?
Well, I think Alonso definitely comes up immediately. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. I think you throw all this service time stuff out the window too, because like, what are you? That, like, in and of itself feels dirty to talk about, but also it's like something weird to do with a guy who you're not sure about.
Right.
So I think he comes up immediately, and I think now, having thought out loud about Wilmer Flores, super utility man, that's what he goes into, and you fire Reyes into the sun immediately. So you get that dead weight off your bench and figure that out. And then otherwise, I mean, I guess you stop playing Jose Bautista at third base, because that was a weird thing that happened today also, unless you really have to. If you're given Todd Frazier a day off, but with Wilmer Flores, you shouldn't have to anymore.
Right, yeah.
Unless
you're trying to convince other teams that the Braves were wrong,
yeah,
and Bautista can play third base, but I'm with you.
And he can a little bit, but I think at this point, I don't know if you do it anymore, just because I guess, yeah, you try to get someone to bite, but by the end of August, he's still on the team. You don't do it anymore. And I guess the only other reason to do it was because you kind of want his bat in the lineup. And I think Austin Jackson should play center field the rest of the way, unless they mix in Nimmo some more to see if they have it with him.
Right.
So maybe they don't have to sign him next year if they think Nimmo is a competent enough center fielder for until Lagares gets back, if he's ever the same again. I mean, it feels like every year with him where you're like, ah, oh, he's finally getting it back together after his last injury, and then he goes down with some fluke thing again.
What's especially hard about the Austin Jackson, Brandon Nimmo, Michael Conforto situation is that all of us know what the best case scenario here is, which is that Nimmo shows that he is a competent center fielder.
Yeah.
And that really simplifies everything. Because if Nimmo is even if he's your 4 out of 6 days a week center fielder, that simplifies the outfield situation so much for next year. But if you really don't believe that either Conforto nor Nimmo can play center field every day, then you're really in trouble because Cespedes is coming back at some point next season. We hope, God, we hope.
Oh, man.
And you have. You have then, because Lagares will be healthy. So you have Lagares, Conforto, Nimmo, Cespedes, Bruce, and possibly insert Austin Jackson or Jose Bautista here to find playing time for. And that's not going to work out for you. I don't know what to
And
tell
what's
you.
And what's annoying about all the stopgap moves too, and all these weird signings, is that while you would like to think about the Mets, in a perfect world, they'd spend more money on free agents, but they're at a point where it's almost dumb because they're not going to cut weight with these guys. Like, you'd love to say, oh, we're just going to go out and get Harper because we can, because we're a large market team, even though the Wilpons would never do that. But they're like, oh, well, we're already locked into Jay Bruce, and we are not going to cut that and have dead money. There's all this, these dumb signings preclude them from making smarter
Right.
ones.
I still hold out the faintest bit of hope that the Wilpons could be convinced to listen to reasons why Manny Machado makes sense. I
That'd be so
don't think
wonderful.
they're ever going to do it, but I think
No.
that there's enough logic in the signing that even the Wilpons could be slightly convinced of the merit of the signing.
But then, yeah, I mean, that would become what becomes the conversation of, well, he really wants to play shortstop, so we're going to have to displace Amed Rosario, who they want to play center field, so maybe they'll just do that
I
instead.
mean that
Because they really love playing guys out of position in center. Why not just move a guy from the infield out there?
that would be the most unbelievably Mets move possible.
They make a super positive by signing Machado, but throw Amed Rosario in center field.
And like, look, I am the world's biggest. I mean, again, I think we all love Rosario, very, very much. But if it's Machado versus Rosario, you take Machado. I mean, especially because Frazier is not a long-term plan at third base. So you sign Machado, you trade Frazier, you give McNeil reps at third, or you make Flores your everyday third baseman. You do something.
Yeah, you figure it out. You make that the rest of those decisions harder for a guy like Machado.
Yeah. Speaking of Wilmer Flores being a bad first baseman, he just made one of the worst throws you'll ever see a first baseman make.
Love to hear it. It hurts me. Oh, here it is. I guess my stream was behind.
Okay.
Oh boy, there it
Yeah.
is. Yep, that'll do it. You throw to the bag, Wilmer, not to the pitcher.
Exactly. I haven't played baseball since fourth grade. I'm aware of
Yeah, I played a lot of first base very poorly, so I've done that before.
that.
So yeah, no, that's not the right move. Oh boy, yeah, he does not play good first
No,
base.
he's not. But yeah,
But even when he was playing short every day, he figured it out eventually.
he
I mean, he was
did.
making all those throwing errors, and it was something so simple that I saw where he just was crossing his legs. But then second half of the season, he made one throwing error the rest of the year.
Yeah.
He figured it out eventually, and I think he's a guy that needs everyday reps.
Yes.
He's figured it out this season once he's been playing every day. He's had some of his better numbers of his career. His splits have evened out. He's done pretty well. The power isn't completely there, but he could still get to the 16 he hit last year. I mean,
Yeah.
he's played pretty well offensively.
Yeah. Tim Peterson is making his case to not be on the team next year, by the way.
Yeah. So much for a Leaderson. It's fine. He can join the rotunda of guys who have no business being on the Mets.
That's true. Yeah. But so okay, so again, you're in charge of the Mets here. You bring up Alonso, you're playing Reyes never.
Yeah. Oh God, Rice is gone.
Any particularly inspired pitching decisions?
I would love to cut bait with Vargas, but I don't think you can at this point. I want to see Vargas in the bullpen. I'd just for laughs and to see if maybe you could scrounge some kind of value out of him that way. And I mean, he can't be any worse than a lot of the guys they have out there right now. And start Oswalt every day or every fifth turn. I mean, he should be out there more often than anybody else.
Yep.
I'd rather have him than, I mean, I was just listening to your episode from last week, so maybe that's kind of imprinted on my brain a little bit and I'm stealing this one. But I mean, I'd rather have him. I think what you guys said last week is right. You just it's again it goes in the same theme of this. I'd rather see what I have with him than what you know you have in Vargas.
Right.
And I'd rather even that's learning something new. If see if Vargas can do it out of the bullpen.
Yeah, at the end of this season, you have nothing to lose by trying that.
Yeah, and maybe hipster Vargas will bring a cool vibe to the bullpen. They could use some personality out there without a Familia.
Yeah.
bring a new face to the bullpen, and it's Jerry Blevins being weird and hipster Vargas.
Yeah. What about how would you manage outfield playing time for the four outfielders that are currently on the roster?
I guess Bautista gets the least. I would like to mix, and I think the days that he plays are days that Jackson sits and you put Nimmo out there. Mm-hmm. You click Conforto every day. I think with him being in that slump he was in the first half of the season, it's really important for him to keep playing a lot. And I think the Mets at least understand that he's going to be playing every day. He's a guy that looks like he needs to play through slumps, and he has. At the second half, he's been great so far. It looks like he's kind of turned it around. So I think he still plays out there, and I think you give up on him in center field. But I think Nimmo gets 2, 3, 4 times at center field a week, hopefully at least two. Mm-hmm. And oh boy, yeah, Tim Peterson, goodbye.
Yep.
That'll do it. Another homer to right field.
I knew that your stream was slow, so I didn't say anything. But I muted my mic and said shit, and then turned the mute back on. So
it's in VR. Oh god.
Yeah. But yeah, no. It's. I think that's very wise. I think first of all, you know, we talked about Austin Jackson a little bit last week, but this guy is playing some of the best baseball of his career right now, which just makes no sense.
And, when you're on your last legs, I think I get it a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, he was supposed to be the next Curtis Granderson.
Yes.
I moonlighted as a Tigers fan for a while, so I was very in on Austin Jackson.
And
so,
I mean, is there any part of you that thinks this is for real?
Not to the level it is, but I think he could be useful in the latter half of his career. I think he's kind of figured out he's striking out a lot. Oh, God, I just looked at it. 30% of his at-bats are strikeouts. That's not good. So maybe not. I was kind of about it for a second, but maybe not. His BABIP's over 500. So no, I guess not at all. I think he's worth a veteran minimum contract.
Yeah.
Next year, he's a fine fourth outfielder. He plays a competent center field, and if he's a guy that I wouldn't be upset at least right now if Lagares gets hurt again next year, whatever it is, that he has to play a little more often than I'd like. I'd rather it be him. I mean, Jose Bautista at this point, it's a ticking time bomb kind of deal. I don't think I'd want him. I'd rather have a younger guy than someone who's going to be, 38?
Yeah.
No, thanks. I'm okay. I'm willing to, just move on from that immediately if I have to.
And look, we've said this in the past, but I think it bears repeating. The fact that the Mets got anything out of Bautista is a minor miracle.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I mean, I'm happy that he's a guy that, as again, as someone who's always hated the Yankees, I've loved Jose Bautista.
Yeah.
I got to watch him beat the Yankees in person on a 10th inning home run. It was incredible. sitting with the bleacher creatures, it was one of the more wild nights of my life as a baseball fan. But so yeah, getting to see him be useful. It's fun. He's always been a fun player. And once his bat kind of came around, he started cranking a couple vintage Joey Bats homers like he did against the Yankees. I mean, yes, please.
Yeah. He seems like a good enough guy, you know.
Yeah,
it's good for him. Yeah,
he's very much a guy that is 100%. If he's not on your team, you hate him. But if he's on your team, he's probably your favorite guy in the world.
Yeah,
that's the sense I get from him.
Yeah, that's a pretty fair assessment. You know, I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I want to ask you about in terms of if you were running the team for the last 6, 8 weeks, whatever it is. I don't know.
Jay Bruce doesn't come back.
Yeah.
I think, and not for reasons of me hating him. I think, like we were talking about, I think it's dumb. If he's this hurt, he's got these issues, I don't think it's worth pushing him to come back. I'm sure he wants to come back, but I say, no, go play in St. Lucie for the rest of the year. We'll, make it up to you with money if that's his big reason, but figure it out with him. I don't think it's worth it. If you're committed to him, it's not worth bringing him up for these games that you want to lose, kind of.
Right.
So you don't, you're hoping for him to play well, but you don't want to win any game, so it'd be better off if he played well in the minors somewhere.
Unless you really believe that he needs major league reps at first base, because he's going to be your major league first baseman for 140 games of next season. Unless you're planning on playing him that much at first base next year, I can't see any reason. to bring him back this year.
Yeah. Which I guess is what they're doing, and that must be their thought at this point, is that they have no other option except for playing Jay Bruce at first base, which is, oh God, this team is so poorly run.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a part of me that thinks that the Mets have never really mastered the whole trading a prospect thing.
No.
And so maybe if they, you know, they gave Alonso this, this, you know, defensive player of the organization, whatever, award to fleece some team into trading.
Oh, God, that'd be incredible. I would never trust them to do it.
No,
that'd be
no,
incredible.
I mean, you know, this is the team that rejected straight up lasting's millage for Manny Ramirez. Remember that, folks.
Hey, but he's, and that's Valdez, you know, he's killing it in Indy, but no, he's not even doing that.
No, I don't think he's even doing that.
Where's my buddy Lasting's these days?
Yeah, I don't know. I know he was
wonder where he's at.
He was playing in Korea for a while. I know.
I think he's still out there.
Or Japan. I'm sorry, Japan. I believe he was playing in Japan. Well, he might have played in the Korean League also. I don't know. He's releasing his mixtapes, and he's doing.
He's currently on the Lancaster Barnstormers of the Atlantic League of Professional Baseball.
Wow.
Oh boy, that was, oh no, that was in 2017. He's retired.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, Lasting's.
Yeah, we hardly knew ye. but yeah, you know, so if the Mets feel like keeping Alonso down is bolstering him as a potential trade chip, first of all, you better be damn sure that Bruce is your first baseman for the next two seasons.
Yeah.
You really, or that you believe that Dom Smith has taken some magic elixir, some brain and nerve tonic, and that he's going to be, you know, the second coming of Keith Hernandez. Unless you believe that, trading Alonso seems totally foolish to me.
Yeah, especially because they're not going to get something good for him.
Right.
Regardless of whether they really increase his value or not. I think, too, this, while you maybe have given him this Defensive Player of the Month award, at the same time, you still don't think he's good enough to be called up.
Right.
So that's going to be a red flag for a team, too. I mean, there's the double-edged sword there of like, oh, we're keeping him kind of a mystery in the majors, but you don't even think he's good enough, it looks like.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that would be incredible if they turned him into someone for real. I mean, it would hurt because then it's, oh, well, if we have Bruce every day, but they turn him into someone real. I don't know who is ever looking for first base prospects because that's just kind of where you shove guys who aren't very good and are slow.
Right.
I mean, like I forget who it was, but there was a really good piece about the draft. It must have been Michael Bauman, about how drafting a first baseman is basically a waste of time.
Yeah.
Because you can, that's where you kind of send guys. It's like,
it's like drafting a relief pitcher to a certain degree.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same. It's a fielding relief pitcher, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't get it. But, you know, hey, the Mets are going to Mets, right?
Yep.
But yeah, are there any sort of arbitrary goals you've set for the team for the last few months of the season, the last few weeks of the season? Anything you want to see them do, aside from hit yet another dinger? Oh, I'm sorry, you're behind on the feed.
Oh no, I'm behind it again. Is Wilmer gonna hit one?
He just did, yeah.
Yes, love that. I also have to keep my phone face down because I get the alerts.
Okay,
it's a big. It's like a horrible game with me. I can't have the Amazing Avenue Slack open half the time. I always have these late streams because I don't get the real SNY. but yeah, I mean, yeah, we Wilmer playing well. But I think it's also, I would like them to maybe only win Wendegram pitches.
Okay.
But like the rest of the games are their fighting chances. And it's like you said, like an anonymous bullpen pitcher's fault.
Yeah.
Wow, that was a high pitch. I'm surprised he got around on that.
I would be willing to sacrifice Tim Peterson to the ERA gods.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Just like let him mop up every single game.
I mean, he's going to do it anyway.
Exactly.
So might as well just like make it worthwhile. He's going to blow them all anyway.
How great of a move would that be if they just said, okay, we're making an official announcement here. Every game for the rest of the season, Tim Peterson enters in the top of the seventh inning.
I want Joey Bats pitching. I've heard rumors. That's what I want to see. I need Joey pitches.
Okay.
That would be the other thing. Because we've seen Jose do it. And if Jose Reyes gets to do it, I want to get to see Joey Bats on the mound.
That would be fun.
I want every Mets position player to get a chance to pitch this season. I don't see why not. That would be a very fun goal for me. They would never do it because that is just the sign of a team who's given up. But that would be very fun for me, personally.
Yeah. There's this, like, unfortunate sort of I don't even know what the word I'm looking for is, like, but I feel like sometimes baseball is the least fun sport there is
Oh, yeah.
because everyone's just so concerned with unwritten rules and how things look, and not even how things look like in a business optics standpoint, just like you don't show up the pitcher, you don't do this or this. And so it would be so fun if there was a game in September, like Syndergaard's supposed to start, but he has an ingrown toenail, so he's not going to start. And they just announce starting pitcher, Jose Bautista.
I mean, the Tigers did that last year with a Romine, played every position in a Major League Baseball game. He did a Will Ferrell, but in a Major League September baseball game, he played every position, which I guess you have to be that bad.
I
Like, that's
guess.
something I think you can get away with if you're last year's Tigers or maybe this year's Orioles, but I don't know if the Mets could do it.
I also just
I
feel
think that'd
like,
get some pretty severe
yeah,
blowback.
I feel like between the between all the various, newspapers and media sources in New York City, you can't do that because there's always somebody to be critical. Whereas if you're in a city with one or
Oh, Francesa would hate
exactly, yeah.
it.
I went to college in Pittsburgh, and there at the time I was there were two daily newspapers in Pittsburgh. I believe they're down to one daily newspaper in Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
Like,
they merged.
yeah. So like, if you're the guy who writes about baseball for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and you have a sense of humor about it, you can write a cute story about, insert pirate here playing all nine positions. If you have, if you're trying to do that in New York, where you have no less than five legitimate daily papers covering you every single day, you can't do that.
Everyone's favorite Bergen Record reporter would have a fit.
Yes, he would. Yes,
I
he would.
think Tim Britton would have fun with it. That's about the only guy who I could trust to really think it was funny.
Yeah, if Mark Carrig was still on the beat, Carrig would find it funny.
The Athletic crew has a sense of humor about them. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Look, you're covering the Mets. You gotta have a sense of humor
Yeah,
about it,
I can't
right?
believe if you don't, what are you doing? Pick a different team, please, or get out of the line of business.
Yeah. And I guess the last thing we should talk about, just because I like to keep this topic coming up, because I really can't believe it's still a topic, is the reemergence of Zach Wheeler. Again, he only went five innings tonight, but gave up one earned run. He's looked pretty good so far. Do you think that this is for real, possibly?
With him, I think it's for real. I mean, I had the misfortune of seeing his first game back last year when he pitched against the Marlins and Wai Yee Chen, and it was miserable. I'm like, this is the worst opportunity for someone to make a comeback ever. And he pitched just okay. But so to be able to see him even to come from that to being basically himself again this year, I mean, it's been great to watch him get the velocity back. He didn't have the control of his breaking ball today, which has kind of been what's eluded him. For even this season, he's missed it at some points, but I mean, he's looked like himself again, which is just—it's good to, I mean, you always want to see that with guys who get hurt. I mean, you're obviously never rooting for guys to stay hurt, but especially when they're on your team, to see someone that you've came up and he was supposed to be this part of this big five rotation, and he was maybe he was the one that got hurt first. And I mean, that was the saddest. Like, he was never really a part of it. He's always the ancillary guy that you kind of forgot about because he was gone for so long. And so to see him come up and be of the, like, outside of the DeGrom Syndergaard duo, the last man standing of those three, and it looks like with Matt's having his issues even when he's healthy, it's been good to see. I think it is for real. I mean, he's like he did tonight. He didn't look particularly great. I mean, it was against the Orioles, but he only had three strikeouts worth of stuff. But got out of jams. He worked really well around stuff, and that's the thing you need out of a top flight starter is a guy who can go out and when he doesn't have his best stuff, still figure it out.
I also think that in a way, Zach Wheeler is the last of a certain breed. I don't think we ever, unless the game really changes in ways that I can't predict, I don't think we ever see 3 months of Carlos Beltran getting Zach Wheeler ever again.
No.
Those sort of trades just don't happen anymore.
Yeah, no, you're right. And that's another thing, too. That's another good bit of it. Like, well, I mean, obviously it was an expiring contract kind of deal, but to know that that trade worked out, that we got someone worthwhile in Zach Wheeler,
Yeah.
is it's comforting, I guess, to know that like, okay, yes, this wasn't a problem. This was a good trade. It worked out. We traded for a prospect and he's panning out.
I think the last couple of seasons will dim people's appreciation of what sort of the early half of the Sandy Alderson era looked like for the Mets. But
Yeah.
when you think about the fact that if it wasn't for Alderson, we wouldn't have Syndergaard or Wheeler in the rotation right now. Just you know, they came from other they came from trades that were masterfully pulled off. When you think about even Jay Bruce, right? Jay Bruce essentially came from Dilson Herrera, who
Yeah.
came from Buck.
We were just talking about
From
this. What was it?
Buck.
Yeah, it was the buck and the. Oh, what was it? I'm gonna find it, maybe.
Yeah, it was the Buck and the shit. But anyway, just like even you know, when you think about all the trades that Alderson made early on in his tenure that led to the roster that went to the playoffs 2 years in a row, even if Bruce was only part of the second time, you know, like
It was John Buck and Marlon
yep,
Byrd.
there we go. Man,
I
I was talking to
forgot
Chris
about
the other
that
day
bit.
about how we used to do a segment on the podcast I'm trying to bring back called Forgotten Mets. And I was inspired to do a Forgotten Mets because I remembered that Nori Aoki was a Met last year. And I
Oh,
totally
yeah.
forgot that. And like Marlon Byrd's another guy who was a Met for a while. I totally forgot he was a Met.
Yeah.
You know?
And he was like semi-competent.
Yeah,
They
that.
turned him into a Tilson Herrera.
Exactly. That was one of those things where Alderson found a guy who was on the scrap heap, who then wound up producing for them.
I mean, and even the Cespedes trade wasn't a total fleecing. I mean, Fulmers turned out to be, he had that one really good season, has had struggled with injuries, but I mean, they turned it into a really solid guy and they
Absolutely.
pushed him over the edge.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, that Blue Jays trade to this day was one of the more masterful things you could ever see.
I mean,
Turn a knuckleballer into Noah Syndergaard.
yeah. And again, a knuckleballer signed to a minor league deal without an invite to spring training.
Yeah,
Like,
and who famously has no UCL.
right, exactly. And look, I would sign R.A. Dickey tomorrow to pitch for the Mets. Like
Yeah.
I am a Dickey apologist through and through. I think I told the story on the podcast before. I went to a taping of The Daily Show a number of years ago when Jon Stewart was still there, and it was when the Mets were terrible, and somebody heckled him about it, and he said, like, sure, the Yankees have CC Sabathia, but we have, and I said, R.A. Dickey. And like, and he reacted to me saying, and that's pre Cy Young Dickey, you know. That's
Yeah.
you know. So R.A. Dickey is a wonderful story, but you know, you'd make that trade every day.
Yeah.
Again, Buck came from that trade,
Right.
which you know is just it's and all we had to do was give up Mike DeFelice and who was the other catcher in that trade?
Oh, it was.
Josh Tolley.
Was it Toli?
Yeah,
Yeah, it was Toli. Okay, sure.
Dickey Tolley and Nickias.
Because
No, sorry, it was
he was
Nickias.
Dickie's.
It wasn't DeFelice, it was Mike
Nicky.
Nickias. Sorry. I'm
Yeah.
getting my shitty third string catchers confused.
Toli was Dickie's personal catcher,
He
right? Was
was,
that the
yes.
part of that? Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had no use for him anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, Jack, this has been fun. I hope this is the first of many appearances on the podcast.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. It's easy to talk about the Mets when they give you so much fodder.
Exactly. When they're winning 16-5 against a
Yeah.
truly horrible, horrible team.
It's bad that they gave up five runs.
It is. But you know, you can put most of that on Tim Peterson, so.
Yep. Oh well. Sorry, Tim.
Yeah. I'm sure you're a nice guy.
You'll always be a leader sin in our hearts, despite the fact that you do on the field.
Mason Avenue listeners, Allison McCaig here with another installment of the DeGrometer and the Mnemometer, where we follow two of our favorite Mets, Jacob DeGrom and Brandon Nimmo. I was out on vacation last week, so I have 2 weeks worth of stats piled up to give you guys as we follow Jacob deGrom's quest for the Cy Young and Brandon Nimmo's fantastic breakout season. So we'll start with deGrom. His last three starts, the earliest one was against the Braves on August 3rd, and he threw 8 brilliant innings, gave up 6 hits, only 2 runs, 1 walk, and he struck out 9. But he took the loss because the Mets only scored 1 run off Anibal Sanchez, driven in by DeGrom himself, and were held scoreless for 3 innings by the Braves bullpen, and they lost 2-1. At this point, DeGrom fell 2 games under 500 to 5-7, and at one point in the broadcast, Gary Cohen said, "It's the same story every single time," and he's absolutely right. This was a string of starts in which DeGrom was fantastic and was either taking no decisions or losses, and the frustration was probably piling up on all counts. But the next two starts after that changed the narrative a little bit. DeGrom finally got some run support and 2 wins in a row. So last Wednesday versus the Reds, he pitched 6 shutout innings, giving up only 4 hits and 1 walk, striking out 10 Reds. And the Mets' offense exploded for 8 runs, and Lugo, Blevins, and Gesellman combined to keep the shutout intact, and the Mets won 8-0, earning DeGrom his first win since June the 18th. But then DeGrom pitched again on Monday in a makeup game against the Yankees and was brilliant yet again. The game looked like it might have gone the route of DeGrom's previous starts. His defense let him down a little bit, but every time the Yankees scored, the Mets managed to strike back, and it was a really nice feel-good win for the Mets. All told, DeGrom threw 6 2/3 innings. He gave up 3 runs, but only 2 of those were earned, on 5 hits, walking 2, and striking out an impressive dozen Yankees. And that's quite a lineup, even without Aaron Judge, to strike out a dozen guys. The Mets beat the Yankees 8-5, and DeGrom found himself back at 500 for the season. Even though Mets fans have been on the Cy Young Award watch when it comes to DeGrom for quite some time, I feel like he hasn't really entered the national conversation until now. It's unfair, but this is likely because he pitched so brilliantly against the Yankees on national television that people are finally starting to take him seriously despite his win totals. Now, seemingly endless articles and TV segments are wondering, can DeGrom win the Cy Young with so few wins? I mean, Felix Hernandez did it, but A, he still had more wins than DeGrom is probably going to end up with, and B, there weren't really pitchers in his league pitching almost as well as him that year with more wins, like there are this year in Max Scherzer and Aaron Nola. But I'm going to take a look at, I'm going to guide you through how things stack up for those three guys, DeGrom, Scherzer, and Nola, since to me, it's really a 3-man race at this point for the NL Cy Young. So let's take a look at the major pitching categories. So obviously, we've already been over the fact that DeGrom doesn't have as many wins as the other two. He has 7, Scherzer has 15, and Nola has 13 wins. Innings pitched, Scherzer has the edge because DeGrom did miss that one start this year with that hyperextended elbow, and then after when he came back, he threw just 1 inning, or I think even less than an inning, in that first start when he came back from it. But I think Scherzer hasn't missed any of his starts that I can recall. So Scherzer's pitched 168 2/3 innings, DeGrom's pitched 159 innings, and Nola's pitched 154 innings. ERA, we all know DeGrom has the edge there. He has a 1.81 ERA, which leads the NL. Scherzer has a 2.19 ERA, and Nola has a 2.28 ERA. Scherzer strikes out more guys than the other two. DeGrom and Scherzer actually in general strike out more guys than most of the rest of the league. Nola's at a pretty average 8.71, but Scherzer is at 12.11 Ks per 9, and DeGrom is at 11.04. But Scherzer does walk more guys than DeGrom by a small margin. DeGrom has 2.04 walks per 9 innings, Scherzer has 2.13, and Nola has 2.51. Scherzer is also more prone to the home run ball than the other two. DeGrom and Nola have an absurd 0.45 home runs per 9 and 0.47 home runs per 9 respectively, and Scherzer has a 0.91 home runs per 9 innings. As far as whip, Scherzer has the edge, because he strikes out a lot of guys, he doesn't allow a lot of hits, so he has a 0.88 whip, whereas DeGrom has a 0.97 whip, and Nola has a 1.00. But DeGrom has the edge in FIP, which adjusts for fielding. Obviously, the Mets have terrible defense. We all know this. When you take FIP into account, DeGrom has a 2.13 there, and Scherzer has a 2.63, and Nola has a 2.82. And ERA Plus, which adjusts for ballpark, in that regard, DeGrom is also ahead. He has a 2.08 ERA Plus, Scherzer has a 1.95, and Nola has a 1.83. As far as WAR goes, baseball reference WAR, DeGrom has a 7.1, Scherzer has a 7.0, and Nola has a 7.4. So he's actually ahead of the other two in baseball reference WAR, although it's really tight. In that category. Fangraphs WAR, DeGrom is ahead of the other two, and it's not quite as close. DeGrom has a 6.2 WAR, Scherzer has 5.6, and Nola has 4.7. A small note as far as baseball reference WAR goes, DeGrom's baseball reference WAR has been fluctuating like crazy this season. If you check the leaderboards regularly, as I do, keeping an eye on the Cy Young race, it's been fluctuating a lot, seemingly due to their park factor adjustments, which may be a bit wonky this season, whereas Fangraphs WAR has been a little bit more constant. I'm not saying that Fangraphs WAR is better or more accurate, but it's just something to keep in mind that BWAR has been a little bit weird this year. So all told, just to summarize what I've just told you, DeGrom has the edge in six of those categories that I talked about. ERA, walks per nine innings, home runs per nine innings, FIP, ERA plus, and FWAR. Whereas Scherzer has the edge in wins, innings pitched, strikeouts per nine innings, and whip. So basically, Scherzer strikes out more guys than DeGrom, he's pitched more innings, and he's won more games. But DeGrom has been overall, in my opinion, based on the metrics, the better and more valuable pitcher. Nola has the edge in baseball reference WAR, but it's hard to argue at this point, given what I've just told you, that Nola should have the edge over either DeGrom or Scherzer, given that they have the advantage in every other category I've mentioned. So, you know, there's a lot of talk right now. Can DeGrom actually pull it off? I think he has a chance. Maybe that's me being a little bit optimistic, but I think he has a shot to do it. I think the Mets do have to get him to 10 wins. If they can do that, I think that he has a shot. But single-digit wins, even though, you know, most of the audience of this podcast, including myself, don't think that pitcher wins should really matter at all. The reality is they do matter at least a little bit to the Cy Young voters. And it's important to keep in mind, too, that Nola has pitched for a team that is competing for a division title. And up until recently, I don't know, one could argue that the national season is over. One could argue it's not quite over yet. But Scherzer was also pitching for, you know, the division win. And DeGrom has not been pitching in, you know, high leverage situations. And those are taken into account when it comes to, you know, Cy Young voting sometimes. So, you know, who knows? But I think that statistically, DeGrom's been the best pitcher in the National League. And I think it's hard to argue otherwise. I don't know. But we'll see. Crossing our fingers that DeGrom continues to pitch well and that maybe the Mets will rattle off a few more wins for him to get to the magical double digits. And maybe he'll have a shot. Let's move on to Brandon Nimmo. First and foremost, we got to talk about that night he had last night. 5 for 5, he got on base 6 times, including that hit-by pitch, and he was a home run short of the cycle. He had a double, a single, and a triple. I was at the game last night, and it was incredibly fun all around, but Nimmo's night was really special to see in person. It was really awesome. He was obviously smiling the whole time. and Nimmo went on to say later, nights like these, you kind of just want to bottle up and live in them forever because it's pretty special. So that was awesome. And over the last 2 weeks, he's been pretty hot with the bat, including last night. So he, over the last 2 weeks, he's slashing .364, .462, .750 with a .222 WRC plus. So on fire. Our friend Brandon Nimmo. In the 52 plate appearances he's had in the past 2 weeks, he's had 16 hits, 5 of those singles, 7 doubles, 2 triples, and 2 home runs, 13 runs scored, 8 RBIs, 7 walks, and 1 stolen base. So maybe, finally, he's breaking out of his little second half slump for good. That'd be great. On the season, he has an impressive 263, 387, 503 slash line with a 145 WRC+, which is first among NL outfielders. In his 411 plate appearances this year, he has 90 hits, so he has a pretty good shot to get well over 100 hits this season. He has 65 runs scored, 39 RBIs, mostly out of the leadoff spot, and 8 stolen bases. He has 3.3 Fangraphs WAR, which is fifth among NL outfielders, and he also has 3.3 Baseball Reference WAR. So Nimmo finally bouncing back after a rough stretch. Last night maybe was proof positive that he's back for good, hopefully. And DeGrom actually rattled off a couple of wins in a row. So it's a positive week for the DeGrometer and the Nimmometer. I will be back next week with another installment, and hopefully we'll keep the good times rolling.
Folks, that does it for another installment of Amazing Avenue Audio. Thank you so much for listening. We truly appreciate it. Please head on over to AmazingAvenue.com, where you can read the work of our podcast contributors and many others. We've got lots of good stuff going on, so check that out. You can also find Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can go to BlogTalkRadio.com and get this show directly from that host, or you can grab it from Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or your podcatcher of choice. If you are using Apple Podcasts, which we recommend you do, please rate, review, and subscribe to the show. Those things help us quite a bit, and thank you in advance. You can email the show, podcast@amazingavenueaudio.com. That email address is still active for a little while longer. I promise we're coming up with a new email address. We'll get to it again, I promise. And until next time, you can follow the contributors for the show on Twitter. I am at Brian Needs a Nap. Allison is at Petite PhD. And Jack, in his first ever appearance, he did great, by the way, didn't he? I think he did great. He is at JF McClooney. JFMCLOONEY. And so the next time we talk to you guys, hopefully the Mets will have, as Jack and I talked about, had great offensive games for young players, great starting pitching performances, and a lot of blown losses from the bullpen, so that sweet, sweet draft pick can come home to us. And so until next time, let's go Mets.